Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. Visit today at HuntRealEstate.com and look at the various algorithms we have to help you evaluate your own home, any property in Western New York, or any place across upstate. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA all across upstate and out to Phoenix, Arizona. This show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. I encourage you to call them today at 633-3700 and ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and wants, and that's guaranteed. Also ask about our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no risk or cost, no risk, no cost, to get a mortgage commitment. So effectively, before you buy your house, you enter the market effectively with cash, which is a huge advantage in today's market where we have a real shortage of inventory, so that when a nice home comes on the market and you want to act on it, you may be competing with somebody who's got cash, at least as it indicates on the contract, and your mortgage commitment functions exactly the same way. So call Hunt Mortgage today at 633-3700 for personalized, customized, what we like to call knock-your-socks-off service. And check out that low-rate guarantee. And don't forget about the first-ever 24/7 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property at all, listed in Buffalo, Niagara, Rochester, Syracuse, Albany, Utica, Watertown, Hudson, all across upstate, even out to Phoenix, Arizona. All you have to do is dial 716-631-4800, enter the street number of the house you want to know about, no matter whose listing it is. It does not have to be ours. And the hotline will prompt you with a choice of street names. Select the one you want, you'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property, all automatically and just that fast, anytime, in any market we serve, on any listing, whether it's ours or any other broker's. The only service of its kind. It's much faster than turning your computer on and going to the web or going to Zillow. All you have to do is punch in the number of the street, a number of the house on any street. As long as it's listed, the information will pop up there for you. Hunt Real Estate is the official real estate and relocation provider for hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and the Rochester Americans. Sabres had a big win last night. Hopefully the Bills will have one tomorrow. Big weekend here for Buffalo sports, and next weekend too, the national or the international world junior hockey championships are in town. Phenomenal opportunity. It won't even be in the United States again until 2022. Maybe. And not even then for sure. And here it is in Buffalo. And it's such a huge opportunity. These are the best players, best young players in the world. Take advantage of going and go down to Canal Side and check it out. They've got a whole bunch of outdoor stuff today, which is fabulous. And go see a game or two this week. It's a very exciting opportunity. We have a very special show for you today. It's a kind of a, well, may not be our year-end wrap-up show, but hopefully it'll function that way as we take a look, a hard look at Western New York and lots of things that are going on, that have been going on, through the eyes of probably the leading expert on development and business in our community, and that's Dottie Gallagher-Cohen, the president and CEO of the Buffalo Niagara Partnership. Good morning, Dottie.
Good morning, Peter.
I just realized the first time you were on the show in an official capacity was 2010 when you were head of Visit Buffalo Niagara at that time, which was a while ago, and you've been on several times since, which is great.
This is six. I pride myself.
One, two, three, four, five, six. That's right.
Yeah, I think I'm like the Alec Baldwin of the Peter Hunt Show.
Can you do a Donald Trump imitation for me?
Not a good one.
Anyway, thank you for being with us on this holiday weekend, and I want to wish everyone a very happy holiday season. It's coming to a close over the next week, and I encourage you to be safe and be responsible and enjoy it with your family and friends. Anyway, we're here to talk about a bunch of stuff today, Dottie, because there's been so much going on in the world and in the nation and then locally that I want your comments on and I think our listeners would enjoy. First of all, let's start at the national level. Yesterday, I believe, the president signed into law a sweeping tax reform act. And among the provisions in that act is a limitation on the amount of state and local taxes that people in high tax states like ours can deduct. How do you think that's going to play in the business community and really across the whole state? Do you see any short, medium, or long-term impact of that kind of thing?
Well, you know, for most of the debate around the national tax reform, the elimination of state and local taxes was not on the table at all. So this was sort of a a moderate win. You know, there were a couple of things that were out of the original bill that I think would have been really devastating to states like New York and California. What we hope is going to happen here is that the state understands it's going to have to control its budget. And I don't think you're going to get pushback from the business community, but I think residents are going to push back big time, particularly people who have bought houses thinking that was the, you know, that's part of their modeling of, you know, what they can afford. So I'm interested to see what it does to the rental market, what it does to people's willingness to buy homes, because I do think it's going to be a factor. Ultimately, states like New York and California have to control their costs, and there are still a lot of and we're going in the wrong direction right now. Mm-hmm. We're talking about things like expanding prevailing wage and paid family leave and increases to the minimum wage that are making it extremely expensive to do business. So the Tax Reform Act, from a business point of view, does provide some counterbalance to that, but we won't be able to take advantage of it unless we can get our costs under control here.
I've had members of the New York State Legislature and the Senate on this show in recent weeks, and they've all point to the governor's office repeatedly, that the power of the governor in this state is pretty remarkable. And yet throughout this whole debate, the governor's been fairly quiet, saying really nothing, where the other high-tax states, their governor's been very vocal. Does that indicate anything to you, or is maybe Andrew Cuomo getting it or something or not?
Well, I think, you know, the speculation is that he's going to run for president. And I think, you know, he didn't feel the need to speak up. He's being very judicious about the things he talks about. They're all towards the left and extremely liberal right now. I don't think that's really reflective of who he is, but I think that's where he feels he's vulnerable politically. So he wants to make sure that the folks on the left understand that he's with them. So that's what you're hearing him talk about, and it's hard to say. He's been criticized as being pro-business, but to be frank, in the past year and a half or so, it doesn't feel that way to those of us who are in the business community at all. So he's done some really good things for Buffalo. So it's a difficult balance for us at the partnership to really kiss him on one cheek and slap him on the face on the other. It's challenging.
Speaking of which. One of the signature projects of the Buffalo Billion was the big plant in the water on the river.
Solar City. Yeah,
Solar City. So that's been very controversial lately because seemingly the company that controls that kind of continuing to back off or be slow to ramp up the employment there. I guess they've begun that process, but It's I think, a disappointment for a lot of us that watch that, and for a year it essentially sat there vacant. What is your take on that at this stage of the game?
Well, they're hiring now. It's a different deal than when it was announced. Panasonic is a part of that, the battery operation at for Tesla, and I hope if Tesla's successful, that's actually a better sort of product mix in that building. It's a million square feet. That's a lot. That's
huge.
It's a big building. I think the majority of the criticism has been around the number of jobs versus what the state's investment has been there. I think that, you know, when you're in a company like Tesla, which when we started it wasn't Tesla, it was Solara, then it was Solevo, then it had a million names, but now that we're Tesla and Panasonic, you know, they're a company that's around innovation, and their business model relies heavily on government subsidy for solar and all of that. So that's a sort of a riskier, it's riskier than sort of maybe traditional manufacturing. So I think you're just seeing them pivoting where they have to pivot, and, you know, they've got Panasonic in there and they're hiring, and, you know, I think it's too soon to judge it, to be honest.
The discussion this week was that they backed off certain elements of the employment guarantees and a couple other things that were part of the deal, the original deal, the Panasonic and Tesla did. Is that news to you, or was that something that you kind of expected?
Well, to be honest, you know, the numbers that they talked about at the beginning were changing in the beginning too, and what the economic impact, which at the time relied heavily on a supply chain to make the numbers work. You know, for every dollar we're going to invest, whatever we're going to get back. And when those promises were made initially, the partnership, we really stepped up with SolarCity. We went out to California. We talked to them, let us help you with this. Let us help you get into the local supply chain. But the fact of the matter at the time and even now is that the main things that they buy, they can't source here. So the supply chain promise was I don't know how they're going to fulfill it, to be perfectly honest. And they're looking across New York State and elsewhere. So I think, you know, these things have a tendency to be overhyped in the beginning, and then the reality of them settles in. So, I think it's sort of wait and see at this point. I mean, they may bring a third person in, you know, to fill that space. I don't really know how it's all going to work.
Rather than dwell on that, then, because that's going to be what it's going to be.
It's going to be what it's going to be.
We have a lot of good things that have happened in this community, particularly from a real estate development standpoint, which is obviously near and dear to my heart. And one of the things that affects all of that is the ability of the developer to take advantage of every available resource, including incentives from various levels of government. It appears as though some of that's going the other way these days, particularly from the ECIDA in terms of the Erie County Industrial Development Agency, in terms of its ability to what it will participate in and how it will help, and the kind of strings attached that are being added. Tell us what's going on there.
Well, it's not ability, it's willingness, right? They're changing their willingness to do certain things, and we talk about it. And I think it comes from a pure place, which is there's a perception that Buffalo's sort of, you know, taken off and everything's great here and we don't need development incentives to make this development occur. But quite honestly, the facts are that Buffalo has higher than average construction costs and lower than average rents. That's the math. So in order to make these deals work, you know, you have to think about it like pieces of a puzzle. To get financing, it's got to have some equity, and a lot of that equity came through the tax credit, historic tax credit program, or the Brownfield tax credit program. Both of those programs were federal funded down through the state level, and in fact, Erie County took advantage of more Brownfield tax reform than any other county in the country, which was great because what that was clean up the soil, clean up the land, and then you get credit for doing that. You get tax credit for doing that. So you think about communities that had all this blighted property, contaminated property. That's a win-win-win. Mm-hmm. And the historic tax credit is the same thing. You have vacant, old, empty buildings that are really a menace for neighborhoods, and a developer can come in with that tax credit and actually bring that building back to life. And if people follow the Buffalo Niagara Partnership on Twitter or on Facebook, we're actually featuring some of those buildings, not only what they look like then and what they look like now, but also their value and the valuation of putting them back on the tax roll, what that does for the community. So what's happening now is a real discussion around a perception that developers don't need these incentives to get the deals done, and that is just simply not true. When you look at the mayor, just in the city, did a housing opportunity study, which is amazingly well done, and really looked neighborhood by neighborhood about what are hot markets and what are soft markets here in terms of real estate, as an example. And you see very clearly that we still have a lot of work to be done, and the city has really focused in a very smart way around development. So, I keep saying to my staff, it's a frustration for me because the perception is things are so great, we need to stop giving out these incentives. The reality is we are in a very tenuous recovery. It should be all gas, no brake right now to sort of ride the momentum that we have. So for the first time sort of in my life, certainly, things are not as good as people perceive them to be. And the reverse has been true my whole life, which is things are better than people perceive them to be. But it really does create a mindfulness around really pushing the envelope and really riding out the momentum. That's what we're concerned about.
Developers have sat in the chair that you're sitting in and told me directly that without these incentives, without the mix, the total mix of those incentives, the project simply wouldn't get done. And you, I know your organization has done a study of various properties in terms of what they were before, their contribution to the tax rolls based upon their assessed value, and what they are today. These are astounding numbers that you've showed me this morning. Astounding numbers.
So, yeah.
500 Seneca Street, for example.
Yeah, that's a great example.
Which was, you know, just a blighted old building there. And that's now the pre-development taxable value was $325,000. It's $26.4 million today.
Yeah.
And yet that project wouldn't have happened without the incentives we've been talking about.
Exactly. And that is such a good example because for those listeners who don't know, 500 Seneca sort of sits between where Larkinville is now and where downtown is. And so if you go from downtown to Larkinville, that was just a very bleak drive. And now with that building coming back to life and some others in that neighborhood, it's really becoming a neighborhood. And you've got people living there, working there. And really taking blight out of a neighborhood. There are houses around that building.
It
makes the neighborhood safer. So it's not just economic development, but in some ways it's also community development.
And that's been a remarkable thing in many respects for Buffalo, that one particular building. I took a tour of the building, and it was fascinating to see what it was and what it is now. And the fact that, among others, M&T Bank has taken a huge chunk of that building for all their compliance and regulatory issues that banks are dealing with. And I talked to Bob Wilmers some time ago about this, and the amount of space they have had to dedicate to that whole issue is 10 times greater than it was before all the problems in the financial services world that may have precipitated, at least in part, the recession. But that's astounding when you think about it. And if that building wasn't done, where would all that business go? I mean,
well, you know, unfortunately, we have had a lot of commercial real estate on the market that was not absorbed. But I do think that things are getting way better in that area as well. But for people who want to see the before and after pictures, a lot of these buildings are on our website at thepartnership.org. It's under, I think, Programs, Adaptive Reuse, and you can actually look at it. What I find astounding is how much the visual landscape has changed as a result of these projects, that we forget how bad it was, you know, and what it looked like to walk down those streets. And so I do think it is. As a matter of fact, the ECIDA commissioned a study about the impact of adaptive reuse, and their consultant said it was one of the most better utilized programs in the entire country and had really been transformative for our community. And I think that's been really great work, and I hate to see that. I hate additional strings being put on that program.
From a mixed-use standpoint, where a building is that was something way back when is now a mixture of retail, office, residential. These are one of the most exciting things for me. I remember asking my grandfather what Main Street looked like when he first started in business. And he said the nicest apartments in the city were the ones above the retail and office space on Main Street, which astounded me because I'm looking around and seeing these basically dumps at that point when I was talking to my grandfather about this. I couldn't believe my ears. But the fact of life is that a lot of that began with the study that your organization was at the center of, the Buffalo Building Reuse Project, I think it was called.
That's right, yeah, with the city of Buffalo. So that the mayor was concerned at the time. HSBC had announced that they were vacating the tower, and we already had very low commercial absorption rates in downtown. And that study, and this predates my time at the partnership, but that study back in 2011 showed that we had a lot of empty buildings, and we had a dearth of downtown housing. So there was demand for about 300 units a year, and we were only building about 100 units a year. So that study gave developers, combined with the incentives that we were able to put together and the mayor's focus on additional incentives from the city, to really accelerate the number of units. I don't have these numbers in front of me, Peter, but I want to say when we started, there were only 900 or so apartments downtown, and we're well over 3,500. Down there now, exceeding the mayor's original goal. But it's interesting, we're doing a study right now. So now developers are saying, well, geez, we've built all these units and they've all filled up, but our population's not growing and we're a little nervous. Now the deals are getting harder to do and the easy buildings are done. Developers always yell at me when I say easy buildings because they keep saying there were no easy buildings. But anyway, the easy buildings are done, and we've seen some development out on the radials. But the question is, where is the market now? And the perception is it might be softening up a little bit. So we've got a study out right now that we're finishing up. It'll be done by mid-January to really look at where we are primarily with downtown residential development and what it's going to look like for the next 2 years, so that developers can either, have a real sense of reality about what's going to happen. And I will say, people that have said, well, yeah, downtown's come back and you built all these apartments, but where did the people come from? We're still losing people, and we are still losing people. But the fact of the matter is, we also have a higher than the national average proportion of young professionals living in our region, and that's what they want. That's the kind of housing they're looking for. So without that, I think we would not be in the position we are in terms of hanging on to those folks for the future here. Mm-hmm. So it's an important part of our community development.
I'll just put this bug in your ear. There's a shortage of for sale housing. And one of the problems with these tax credit projects is that they have to stay rentals.
That's right.
At least for a while.
10 years.
Till you burn them off.
Yeah.
And that is a problem for people that have a home and owned a home all their lives that might want to come back in where the action is, but they just don't want to rent. It may seem attractive for a while, and this is what I'm hearing fairly regularly. It's attractive to go get a 1,400 or 1,500 square foot apartment for a while after you've had a 4,000 or 5,000 square foot house, just because you don't have to worry about all this stuff. Pretty soon you start saying, you know, we're bumping into each other, dear. Is there anything bigger? Maybe we could buy something, and there just isn't anything.
Well, that's the study that we're doing is not just about the rental market, but where are the gaps in the market?
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. You can't find some types of it's very difficult, for example, to find a mid-market condo in all of Buffalo, never mind downtown.
That's
and
right.
So that's really what we're looking to do is to say, what do we need?
And we'll be back with more with Donnie Gallagher-Cohen from the Buffalo Niagara Partnership after these very important messages from our house to yours.
If you're a homeowner age 62 or older, you owe it to yourself to look into a reverse mortgage. Reverse mortgages give seniors many different options to access the equity in their home. There's even a reverse mortgage for purchase available. For more information, call Karen Johnson, a reverse mortgage specialist at Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700 or visit huntmortgage.com. Karen Johnson, NMLS number 485939. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything's truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. Go there today. Check out the algorithms that can help you figure out what your home is worth or any property in Western New York. If you're considering buying one, there's no better resource than HuntRealEstate.com to help you assess what you're doing relative to that property that you might want. And it's the only place in the world where you can find a complete inventory of homes available right now all across upstate and even out to Phoenix, Arizona. And you'll also find access to a complete set of homeownership services at huntrealestate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA, all across upstate and way out west. This show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. And for more information about our exclusive mortgage program that allows you to effectively roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, allowing you to buy the before but live the after, knowing what you're going to be in for as opposed to what most people do. You buy a house and then it becomes the money pit because you open up a wall and you find out there's horrors in there, and all of a sudden your budget is doubled and you don't have the money. You can find that all out in advance through the Buy the Before and Live the After program, 633-3700. Get all the details and also ask about our pre-purchase commitment and even our warm home loan. All those are exclusive programs to Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700. And if you just want to pick up the phone and ask any question about real estate, call the Hunt Customer Service Center at 633-9400. The only one that's kind of North America. And one of our customer service reps will instantly direct you to the appropriate professional for whatever it is you may need, whether you're considering buying or selling a home, financing a home, insuring a home, or even fixing up the one you have. And remember, our guarantee stands. We will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's the seller security plan, available only through Hunt Real Estate ERA agent. This weekend is a light weekend for open houses for obvious reasons. But call that customer service center, 633-9400, if you want to know about any of this stuff. But certainly visit our offices, stop and see our open houses if there's one near you or in the neighborhood you want to be in. I'm in the studio today with Dottie Gallagher-Cohen, the president and CEO of the Buffalo Niagara Partnership. We were talking before the break about we're just starting to get into some of the stuff relative to housing availability and what partnership's role has been in at least educating the rest of us on what opportunities are and doing kind of a scientific analysis of demand and that kind of thing. One of the things that looms above the horizon, literally, for us in downtown Buffalo are two buildings that are largely vacant right now. And in both cases, there was significant work done in terms of their adaptive reuse for residential, among other things. The HSBC Tower being one of those. I met with the architect for the developer in that building, and after he closed on that property, and they had their objective was apartments for rent, and I don't know, I'm not sure that wasn't what the School of Architecture and Planning at UB came up with. It wasn't what we came up with in our study, and it wasn't what the Urban Land Institute came up with, all of which said that it had to be a mixed-use project that would have to rely heavily on the kind of incentives we've been talking about in order for it to work, because of the infrastructure redevelopment costs, which are going to be significant. What are your thoughts about those two buildings, the Statler and the HSBC Tower in particular? Because if just those two buildings came online with even a modest percentage as residential, a lot of the demand that you're talking about could be absorbed just in those two projects.
Yeah, I've met with Mr. Jamal a while ago. I think there's opportunity for that building in terms of for job creation and beyond residential. I haven't heard him say it's going to be all apartments. I heard them say mixed use and really trying to bring that
mixed use
back to life.
But the residential was at least. What I was told was going to be for rent.
Oh yeah, no, and you know more than I do on that. So
I don't know what the status is today.
Yeah,
is
I don't. I really don't either. I haven't spoken to them in about 6 months, but I think there are very few places where you got that many floor plates. For example, my counterpart Tom Kucharski, who works in Invest Buffalo Niagara, their job is to attract new jobs into the region for businesses that are looking to expand mm-hmm. or develop. And you know, you hear him talk about the lack of space for some of those projects. So I think that at least we've got a willing partner developing that building, and I know that there's a lot of conversation about what that might be. I'm just not that close to Peter, and I wouldn't want to mislead your listeners. In terms of the Statler, it's great that the first couple of floors of that building have been activated, but it's still a bit of an eyesore from the back, and from my old convention center days, it pains me when I walk out the front door of the convention center, which already is challenged, to look at the backside of the Statler. So I'm hopeful that building will at least look better from behind than it does right now. But I don't know that what plans Mr. Croce has for the complete development of that building. I think some of it for him is waiting on to find out what's going to happen with the convention center, to be frank.
And what do you think will happen there? That's a very interesting topic.
Well, the county has just invested about $500,000 to do a convention center study.
Mm-hmm.
And the first phase of that study, looking at the competitiveness of the landscape, is done. And I heard some preliminary information, which is confidential right now, so I can't share it. But I will tell you, they've hired an extremely well-regarded consultant who's been in this business around the country to do the study. So I think when their recommendations are going to be, I think we can sort of take them to the bank. If their recommendation is to rebuild or repurpose, I don't know where the money's coming from to do that. I think there's a perception that potentially Albany will step up because of the Javits Center and some stuff that's happened down in New York City and Long Island. So we'll wait and see. But at the time when I was at the CVB, so now almost 4 years ago, the convention center was the third oldest convention center in all of the country. So Paul Murphy, who's GM there, and his staff have done a phenomenal job of managing an old building, and I think they're doing the very best they can do given its condition.
It seems to be busy.
It is busy. They do a great job, and they attract a lot of business that travels through New York State. They do a great banquet business there.
Mm-hmm.
They've that building has survived, quite frankly, and I mean this very sincerely, because of the quality of the people who work there.
Mm-hmm.
If they were not as good as they are, we'd be having a different discussion.
One more thing on the whole issue of residential, because it is residential in effect, is the hotel business.
Yeah.
We've seen a lot of new rooms added to the mix in downtown Buffalo. Are we at the right level now, in your opinion, or is there still room for more hotel development, at least in the short run?
Well, it's interesting because when you talk about a convention center, one of the things that you have to have is proximity of hotel rooms. And if you look at the hotels that have been developed, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they're significant. And The quality of the hotel stock overall has gone up tremendously with the addition of the Westin and some of the other properties. But very few, with the exception of the Westin, very few full-service properties have come online.
That's
so
right.
One of the challenges from a convention meetings point of view is meeting planners don't want to sign multiple contracts with multiple hotels. And so we don't have big, you know, other than the Hyatt and maybe the Westin, it's difficult to put together a big block of rooms in a single contract.
Mm-hmm.
So the hotels are doing well. Their average daily rates are up. I think Tom Brady would have a lot less to complain about today than he did a few years ago when he was talking about hotel rooms.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it's there's always room for growth. I think tourism is still growing here, and I do believe that if we were doing a better job in tourism promotion, we could even increase that demand more, which is another county decision, quite honestly.
On this show, we discussed among the options for the HSBC Tower before Mr. Jamal bought it was to build a convention center
right.
on that site because of the available land and also a parking lot that's across the street and the opportunity to use adjacent buildings. And it's I was tortured over that. And it wasn't even my suggestion, but I was tortured over that for even suggesting such a thing, that, and including some notables around town that thought this was my idea. It wasn't. I just was echoing what
right.
people had said as a possible adaptive reuse
right.
of that building. And there that is a building with the square footage
right.
to put in a full-service, high-quality hotel, as well as other usage. And there would be the land. And I'm not advocating for this. Don't get me wrong. But
I actually thought that was a sort of an interesting idea when the report – I don't know if that made it into the final report, but I was one of the people talking about that. And what's interesting about that as a location is it would – if you put something really great there, it would connect the waterfront to downtown
exactly.
more meaningfully.
Exactly right.
And it's on the transit line, which would help people sort of get around downtown at least who were in town from out of town. So
1,200 parking spaces.
Yeah. There's a lot of good stuff about it. That building's got – that building's got some bones.
And it has great initial architecture, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And wide open floor plates, like you were mentioning, you kind of breeze through. But
right.
that's a key component when you're talking to a business these days that's looking to relocate.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't want to be scattered among floors with a bunch of walls dividing everybody. It's just awkward and inefficient.
Well, I think it does, to some degree, site selectors pick places that, you know, where the infrastructure exists.
Mm-hmm.
And so if someone's looking for an urban campus, that's a really great option.
Huge. We have a bunch of callers, and we're going to take one right now. This is Gustav from Williamsville. Gustav, how can we help you?
Good morning. There's a bunch of issues related to getting building permits or not, reassessment based upon permitting, and reassessment based on future sales. And the process of getting permits can be several months, which jeopardizes deals. And just blurting it out here, there's a whole bunch of construction that's going on without permits because of the delays, the inability to get inspectors out. They're overwhelmed and all that. And then, frankly, to avoid the reassessment issue, if you're only doing a renovation versus a sale, the anticipated tax rate based upon the new values of either the construction or, in case of the sale, a sale. And I mean, I think there's widespread avoidance of permits because the permitting process is so involved. It's also imprecise because I've even asked building permit people. I said, what in fact needs to get a permit? And I was told, even in Amherst, by an inspector, that if you change the carpet, you have to get a building permit because it's a public health issue. I just think there's a whole bunch of chaos and indeterminacy about the timing of these things and then the jeopardy and the higher assessments. And I'm just blurting this out, but I'd like your reaction to it.
Well, the assessment question is an interesting one, and I will tell you one of the successful reforms in Albany has been a property tax cap of 2%, which we're right now fighting to make permanent because the tax rates right now cannot be increased, beyond that, which is a good thing.
Overall.
Right. And that's
a singular building.
Correct. Well, the assessments can change, and that's what the gentleman, I think, what Gustav is talking about here. But that's sort of the yin and the yang, right? We're excited that our property values are going up, but we don't want to pay an increased assessment because our taxes are already so high. So I'm not exactly sure how communities are going to be doing that. On the permitting question, Peter, you would know a lot more about that than I would. On the permitting question, I don't know. I've heard some of what Gustav was saying, all I know for certain that is in the city that the mayor ripped apart the permitting process, and my understanding is as right now that it's much more streamlined than it was 10 years ago, and I hear developers say it's a lot easier to get stuff done in the city than it used to be, but I can't speak to the suburbs.
I talked to the mayor about that this week, as a matter of fact, on a particular project. We'll come back and talk more about this from our house ears after these very important messages.
If you're a homeowner age 62 or older, you owe it to yourself to look into a reverse mortgage. Reverse mortgages give seniors many different options to access the equity in their home. There's even a reverse mortgage for purchase available. For more information, call Karen Johnson, a reverse mortgage specialist at Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700 or visit huntmortgage.com. Karen Johnson, NMLS number 485939. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. This show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, home of the pre-purchase agreement. Call them today, 633-3700. I'm in the studio today with Dottie Gallagher-Cohen, the president and CEO of the Buffalo Niagara Partnership, and we've been digging into a lot of topics here, and I've got a bunch more that I want to ask you about.
Have me back for show number 7,
Peter. I definitely have you. I've got to have you back, because I want you to get into your agenda for 2018 and what the partnership's going to be focusing on and how we continue. Last segment, we always talk about how we maintain the momentum. And you've alluded to the fact that the momentum is strong psychologically today. We all feel things are going well.
And they are better. I mean, there's no question.
They're much better. And you talk about the storm clouds there on the horizon as well. Which are real as well. So all of my guests want to see everybody does. They want to see the momentum continue, and they want it to be real.
Right.
My point all along is that it really is real when you've got a population push, when you've got new people moving into the community, and this is true of all across upstate, all across the whole country. New people moving in, businesses moving in, a good feeling about the location for lots of reasons, and we've talked about those reasons many times in the past. In your opinion, what are the key factors, not just what your agenda is, but which I hope addresses these factors, but what are the key factors not just maintaining the psychological momentum that we have, but the real momentum going forward?
Yeah, I think your point is well taken. So we're doing much better when you look at compared to ourselves. Right. If you look at any of those metrics, if you look about unemployment and wages going up compared to, Buffalo Niagara region compared to the old Buffalo Niagara region compared to the new one, we're doing great. When you look at our peer metro cities, by peer metro, what I mean is the metro areas that are the five below us in terms of population size and the five above us, there are startling differences in terms of the rate of recovery since the recession. So I've got a couple of those things here. So if you look at this, we are ranked number 282 of 318 national metros for job growth. Erie County is on the bottom. It's like 93. In terms of counties and private sector job growth, because that's what you're talking about. The way you grow the economy is you get more jobs here the taxpayers are not paying for. That's what we mean. We've actually had the lowest job growth rate of between 2010 and 2015 compared to those other 10 metro areas. So it's important that we don't sort of believe our own press releases here, but it's also the recovery is also real, right? So that's the balance that we're trying to, and as president of the chamber, it's hard to say negative things about the community that I love so much because you know, but we have to be based in reality here. So the question becomes, how do we advance things? And quite honestly, a lot of what needs to happen is structural reform in Albany. We are 49th out of 50 in business friendliness in the country, second only to New Jersey. So we are focused on those things that are cost drivers that make businesses who may consider moving here because of our low-cost power or access to water, which are tremendous assets that we have, sort of shy away because of the actual regulatory environment and the tax structure of doing business here. So in terms of our agenda, you know, sometimes you sound a little bit like a broken record. I've talked a little bit about it, but one of them is to make the property tax cap permanent. It is not permanent. It is set to expire. We are very focused on tax relief overall, and development and construction. One of the huge threats to that is a push to expand the definition of what is prevailing wage. And this is one of these wonky things that's hard to get people's attention on. But prevailing wage includes, quite frankly, all the bad pension costs that have been passed along. So you take a job and you can increase the cost of doing any construction job by 25-30% by having to pay a prevailing wage. And there's a great report called Prevailing Waste that the Empire Center has put together. I would really encourage people to read it to understand. In the Tappan Zee Bridge, for example, it's tens of millions of dollars in the difference of cost on the New York side of that bridge than there is on the New Jersey side of that bridge. And the push to expand it is that any project, including private development projects, that get any form of subsidy will be subject to prevailing wage requirements. I mean, it is absolute lunacy. So that's something that we're really talking about. We're pushing hard to keep the ECIDA's adaptive reuse policy intact without any additional strings being put on that. And we have opposed successfully mandatory inclusionary zoning in the city of Buffalo, which was a big push that would not have been good for development. Federally, we're really focused on workforce issues. We mm-hmm. want to see the reauthorization of the Pell Grant and to expand eligibility to cover certificate programs and other job readiness training. What we're seeing is we have a lot of middle school jobs that are going unfilled that don't require a four-year degree. But again, the system is not set up to help folks who want to get into those types of fields. And so a big push on a professional licensing program for immigrants and refugees so that we can have them working to benefit the regional economy. We're continuing to push for more private sector representation on the Workforce Investment Board, which is where all the federal money for workforce training comes into our community. We're very focused on our geography in terms of our Can-Am binational economy and all things bridges. And a lot about transportation and infrastructure as well, which the federal government is going to take on now, a major infrastructure investment project. And we want to make sure that that those are really investments that benefit the community.
So what you're saying is you're not very busy then.
Oh, my gosh. I always say, Peter, in this job, there's a lot of job security here. If I don't screw it up, there's so much work to be done.
Plenty to be done. One of the sectors that we've been very in some way, shape, or form, dependent upon in our community is the banking sector.
Yeah.
And this week, of course, that whole world and our whole world is rocked with the news that Robert Wilmers had passed away suddenly last weekend. This is a shock to a lot of us that certainly knew Bob, but certainly to our community in terms of his philanthropy and the fact that of all the jobs created here in Buffalo, net jobs created, the vast majority of them were created by one institution.
That's right.
M&T Bank.
That's exactly right.
So we've got big shoes to fill in this community, and this goes to the power of an individual. And I think a lot has been said already about Bob Wilmers and his individual power. But if you look back over the players in the banking world, and just in Western New York, since Bob came to town 34 years ago, there's been a revolving door, mm-hmm. except in his office, which is really quite remarkable. How do you see that evolving? And just comment, if you would, a little bit on Bob's influence here in Western New York. And obviously, Renee Jones is a tremendous successor.
He is.
But there's Bob Wilmers was a one and only.
You know, I have to say that there were a number of leaders some years ago when things were so bleak here that really stepped up to try to improve the community in the ways that they could.
Just before you go on, in light of what you just said about all the things that you're working on relative to the state, there was one voice year after year through their annual report that was extremely specific and very vocal on almost every issue that you just mentioned.
Exactly.
And that was Bob Wilmers.
Exactly. And, you know, Bob was fearless in that way. For people who didn't have the fortunate opportunity to work with him, he was an extremely soft-spoken person and very unassuming physically. You know, he was just a very warm, unassuming person. But, man, he had a bite. And he was fearless in telling the truth to people. And he had such a level of respect of political leadership and people of influence that he really was a true leader. I mean, he really brought people together. Bob was someone who understood the numbers and asked the right questions. And, you know, and now with M&T's expansion throughout the country, really, you know, it's really an understanding of the differences of doing business here versus elsewhere. And so he, I would describe him as being very courageous in that. He just really spoke truth to power in a way that I'm not sure that there's anyone standing behind him who's at that with the same level of stature and commitment that Bob had to our region. And he will be sorely missed here. I think he imbued an incredible culture at M&T of promoting from within and growing talent here. And I think that should last. I mean, a lot of people have called me and said, "Do you think the bank will get sold and move?" And I hope not. I don't think that's at all what Renee and Rich have planned. Rich Gold, who's the COO, is another active community leader, and Renee's been very involved in the community. So I think the bank was left in really capable hands with a strong legacy that will help this community for years to come. I the loss of Bob personally is something I don't think we're going to be able to replace.
I don't think it is possible, but it shows me, and I think the hopeful thing in all this is the power of an individual. Which I think Bob certainly, I mean, he was personification of that concept in my mind. When he walked into a room, like you say, very unassuming, but everybody's attention went right to Bob.
Oh, yeah.
And he was it. And that's no question about it. And one of the comments in one of the articles I know firsthand, and that's when he starts with question one. And he finishes with question seven
exactly.
or eight, and by seven or eight you're starting to get, you know, a little sweater on the collar.
Well, he had zero tolerance for BS.
That's
zero.
Right. That's right.
And I learned very early in my dealings with Bob, if he asked me a question I didn't know the answer to, I say, "I'm not sure. I got to get back to you on that."
Absolutely right.
You know,
don't fake it.
Don't fake it. No, he is not a fake it with make it
no,
kind
no
of
tolerance.
Person. Yeah.
Yes, he asked me one question. Very insightful question about the HSBC Tower, actually probably 5 years ago now. I said, "Peter, if you could get it for free, would you buy that building?"
Yeah, yeah.
And I had to think about it, and I said, you know, I just like you, I'm going to get back to you on that one, Bob, because
yeah.
I have to look at the numbers again. But
yeah.
he had that ability to zero in on the essence of just about anything and drive a point or find out from the listener or the person he was questioning exactly what was going on.
We also had tremendous retention of detail and numbers. And what always amazed me, because I always, when I'm talking about numbers, I like to have my notes in front of me. I remember proportion, but I don't remember the numbers. Bob remembers the numbers. And he would be able to pull, you know, numbers from the left-hand side of the room and numbers from the right-hand side of the room and come to what, when you hear him say it, was an obvious conclusion that nobody else thought of. So I learned a lot from him, and I'm really happy I had the opportunity to work with him.
It's funny some of the reactions he got from some of our elected officials when he called him on the carpet with that kind of detail.
Yeah,
You and I know what I'm talking about there. Anyway, we've only got a few seconds left here in the show, and I do want to thank you, Dottie Gallagher-Cohen, President and CEO of the Bothnagar Partnership, for being with me this morning. And
thank you, Peter.
And all our listeners, too. On this holiday weekend, I want to wish everyone a very happy and healthy and prosperous new year, and certainly for the balance of the holiday season. Stay safe and stay healthy and be with your family and friends and enjoy this time together. We'll see you next week or again at the same time. Remember, when it comes to real estate, all of upstate is hunt country.